This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Looking for stories to share with you leads me in all kinds of directions. For example, I read from Fran Hammerstrom's My Double Life, Memoirs of a Naturalist, the chapter called But It's Already Done, about the surreptitious nighttime move of Aldo Leopold's dark basement office to a much nicer sunny first floor of an empty house on campus. In it, Fran referred to fellow students Wade and Hawkins, who were also conspirators in this caper. I decided to see what I had in my library about these graduate students. One book I found is titled Aldo Leopold Mentor by his graduate students, subtitled Proceedings of an Aldo Leopold Centennial Symposium, held in Madison, Wisconsin, April 1987. In this, I found absorbing stories by Arthur Hawkins. I had found Hawkins. In the Arthur Hawkins stories, one that piqued my interest was his dog story. Hawkins bought a dog named Gus, a short-haired pointer, to help him with his field work on bobwhites and for hunting. When he moved, he gave Gus to Leopold. I'll read you Hawkins' story and then read from a blog post I found exploring the Aldo Leopold Foundation website, written by Sarah Woody, a Leopold Foundation fellow, titled, Did Aldo's Dogs Help Shape His Ecological Consciousness? So first, from the Hawkins story from the symposium in 1987, then Sarah Woody, starting with Hawkins. The professor saw cultural value in the sport of hunting, but only if it fostered, quote, a distinctly American tradition of self-reliance, hardihood, woodcraft, and marksmanship, unquote. He was scornful of gadgetry and of where and when to go advisories. To him, knowledge of the whereabouts of good hunting and fishing was a very personal matter, not to be hawked at the marketplace. He loved to hunt, but was much more concerned about the quality of the experience than about the bag of game. And his strong sentiments regarding stewardship and ethics were not shelved when game was plentiful and shooting opportunities high. I can vouch for these statements because I hunted upland game and waterfowl with the professor on a number of occasions. The professor was an excellent marksman who deplored crippling losses. As a result, dogs were almost always an important part of the Leopold household and the professor's hunting trips. In this regard, I was able to make a contribution. My first major investment as a graduate student was the purchase of a dog needed for game bird censusing at Favel Grove. A German short-haired pointer registered as Gotz von Tübingen. Gus had been trained by Joseph Burkhardt of St. Croix Falls to hunt sharp-tailed grouse. At Favel Grove, he had difficulty at first with pheasants because they don't freeze as prairie grouse do when pointed. But Gus learned fast and soon became an excellent dog for both census and hunting purposes. I was proud of his progress and wanted to show him off, so I invited the professor and John Emlin to open the 1937 pheasant hunting season with me. We lined up ready to move across the field at 12 noon, official opening time. As dog handler, I was in the center. I released Gus, and he picked up a scent immediately, working sharp to the right and disappearing under a weedy fence row at the edge of a pasture. Moments later, he reappeared, retrieving a squealing piglet. When I left Wisconsin in 1938 to take a job with the Illinois Natural History Survey, I gave Gus to the professor. Late in 1943, while I was in the Army, stationed at Amarillo, Texas, I got a note from the professor along with the draft of an essay entitled Gus's Last Hunt. The essay, which explained how Gus met his end, was later published in Round River. How much the professor thought of Gus and how much he appreciated dogs is revealed in a letter he wrote to Joseph Burkhardt, dated January 20, 1944. Quote, Gus turned out to be one of the most brilliant field dogs I ever owned, but I lost him last November. I'm anxious to get a pup of the same strain. If you're still raising short hairs, I'd like to know what you have on hand or in prospect. If not, can you forward this letter to someone whose stock you can recommend as equal to Gus's? Unquote. And now I'll continue with Sarah Woody's blog as part of the Aldo Leopold Foundation website and her thoughts about what dogs meant to Aldo Leopold. This is titled, Did Aldo's Dogs Help Shape His Ecological Consciousness? It's dated August 18th, 2022. And this is Sarah. I'm a huge dog lover, known to annoy my mother by pointing out every dog I see on the sidewalk as we are driving. Given this obsession, I was quick to notice when I first watched the feature documentary about Aldo Leopold's life, Green Fire, that an astonishing number of historical photos of him included dogs from boyhood to his final days. It was deeply humanizing to think of Aldo not as the historical figure, but as a lover of dogs. As I explored further, I saw the timeline of Aldo's life in a new light through the photographic chronology of him with his dogs, and I pondered how he may have been shaped and enriched by them. Aldo's father, Carl Leopold, was a self-taught outdoorsman and hunter, and the family dog often joined young Aldo and his father on these adventurous romps during Aldo's youth. Surely, many dog lovers like myself would concur that caring for an animal in one's childhood can foster ethics of compassion and responsibility. These traits, it turns out, would become central to Aldo's land ethic, his view that there must be a set of philosophical and moral principles behind the human-land relationship. As Aldo progressed into young adulthood, he landed his first job with the U.S. Forest Service after graduating from the Yale School of Forestry. One of his most enduring essays, Thinking Like a Mountain, was inspired by this time in his life. In it, Aldo says he was full of trigger itch as he excitedly shot a wolf, realizing only too late the folly of his ways when he saw a green fire dying in her eyes. It makes me wonder if this change of heart regarding wolves as varmints to animals integral to the health of ecosystems was in any way connected to his lifelong ties to her beloved canine descendants. Also during this time in the Forest Service, Aldo met the love of his life, Estella Bergere, with whom he eventually had five children. Like in his own childhood, the Leopold children were raised with a series of ever-present family dogs, most named Gus or Flick. The majority of the dogs were German short-haired pointers or Springer Spaniels. I can see why the Leopolds chose these breeds, recognized for their duality as family-friendly dogs, but also sturdy, athletic, and trusty hunting partners. Instilled from his youth, hunting with his dogs was a favorite pastime of Aldo's throughout his life. In his essay, Red Lanterns, he writes of his dog being a professor of logic, following his trusty nose, and himself a dull pupil while out on a partridge hunt. I respect Aldo for his attitude not of dominion over his dogs, but as partners from which he could learn to become better attuned to his natural surroundings by following their wolf-like instincts. On one hunting trip toward the end of Aldo's life, tragedy befell his dear dog, Gus. The dog, enraptured by the scent of an injured doe, sustained a calamitous injury after being kicked by the panicked animal. The only humane response was for Aldo to put him down. In a touching gesture, Aldo covered Gus with his coat, and in his journal entry from the next day, he wrote that he had no appetite for hunting. Aldo's daughter, Estella Jr., confirmed the deep sentiment that the family held for their dogs, writing in her memoir, Stories from the Shack, that we all love them and consider them part of the family. Sadly, Aldo Leopold passed away in 1948 at only 61 years of age of a heart attack while volunteering to help fight a neighbor's grass fire. In a poignant essay, The Neighbor's Fire, Estella wrote of her, her mother's, and their current dog Flicky's reaction to the news of her father's passing. A heavy weight hung over the two of us and the dog. We felt an emptiness that cannot be described. We could not talk. It strikes me that Estella chose to write about Flicky in this way, just as much a part of the family as herself and her mother united in grief. Aldo discerned that the wolf he shot so carelessly in his youth had a wisdom beyond his understanding, quote, known only to her and the mountain, unquote. But I would like to think that when he was forced to put down Gus, he realized that our dogs also hold wisdom. Unconcerned with modernity, attuned to the environment with every sniff, and supplying endless love, the spirit of dogs embodies the values that would underlie Aldo's conception of a land ethic. So maybe I'm onto something with my canine obsession. It helped me see these creatures not just as background objects in historical photos, but as major players in Aldo Leopold's life, serving as guardians, teachers, friends, and partners. I hope in writing this that they are brought to the foreground, where they should redeem their rightful place as key influences on Leopold, as they are for so many of us. And that's a wonderful essay by Sarah Woody at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. She's a fellow there. I encourage you to go to the aldoleopold.org website and look up this blog entry to see the photographs of Leopold with his dogs throughout his life. And I think you'll be interested in many of the other blog entries by a variety of different people involved at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. There's some wonderful things to read there. This is Maggie Jones, a definite dog lover, and Natural Wonders. Thanks for listening.